This is the Jason Greger Show podcast presented by Lakewood Chevrolet. Good people, great service, and also voted the number one dealer in Canada at DealerRater.ca. Check them out, LakewoodChev.com. Shog joins us from Florida. Shogger, I know they talked about looking into the future of hockey, and maybe was there one idea that jumped out to you that said, hey, you know what? This is something I would like to see hockey bring in the future.
Good question. Well, Brad Treliving talked about an idea that his group discussed, which was taking the faceoff dots and getting rid of them in, like, the offensive zones, right, and making the faceoff in the middle of the ice.
Yep.
And then kind of having, like, a rectangle instead of a circle, having, like, a rectangle to spread the players out. Now, the NHL has actually tried this a few years ago, like in one of their developmental tournaments, and apparently it didn't work very good, but that was with the face-off circle and not the rectangle. So he talked a little bit about that. They spent quite a bit of time on it. He was intrigued. So they were batting that around out there, not being able to dump the puck in. I don't really – a lot of third and fourth liners around the league are going to be pretty confused once they hit the red line. So I'm not sure if there's much to that. But the spirit of the day was, doesn't matter how crazy the idea sounds, don't just write it off, dig into it, and flesh it out a little bit, which they did their best to do. But with some of the old school thinkers in the group, I can't imagine some of them went too well.
Well, yeah, I'm sure there's some that aren't. Now, it was interesting, speaking of old school guys, Lou Lamoriello, not a fan of the loser point, which, jump in line on that one. But do you think they're... any chance, Ryan, we could see them eliminate the loser point while maintaining the shootout?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think we're a ways away from anything substantial happening on that front. I don't think it's something that they dig heavily into at this point. And it'll have to go through a whole bunch more process if it were ever to actually happen. Lou wants to go back to ties. He wants to go back to, you know, 1 point for a tie and 2 points for a win, and nothing for a loss, no matter what. So he wants to go way back. I don't know. I mean, the problem with the loser point and a lot of general managers around the league, I mean, the reason their teams, there's this feeling of parity in the league when a lot of teams leave the rink way more often than not having lost a hockey game, picked up a point. And so it'll be counterproductive for a lot of general managers because their teams are able to more teams are able to stay competitive despite losing hockey games. And so I'm not sure that there'll be a big appetite overall with the group to get rid of that loser point. I mean, it all comes down to the quality of the game. And when you get down into the last 3 minutes of a game, what's the quality of the game look like? Are they playing for that point and willing to take their chances in overtime? How do you entice them to try and make the end of games more exciting? And it comes down, at the end of the day, it comes down to the product. But I don't know that we're going backwards on that one.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I would love to see them. Although, you know what, I wouldn't be opposed to them bringing back ties. I hate 3 points being handed out in a game. If it's only two, then it's only two. I would like to see them if they're going to go to a no ties, then extend overtime to 10 minutes of 4-on-4 and have no shootout. I wouldn't want to see a team lose a 60-minute – yeah, 3-on-3. I wouldn't even want to see a team lose a 60-minute game in overtime and then get nothing because they lost in a shootout. I can't see that happen.
Yeah, I mean – yeah, like the 3-on-3 is entertaining for the most part, and I find I enjoy it. I think it's something people will stay around to watch. We're seeing some nice moves in shootouts, but I mean, I think shootouts have become kind of, you know, pretty ho-hum. The novelty certainly wore off long ago. So I'd be in favor of them figuring out a way to settle it with play, and if more 3-on-3 is getting it done, then I'd probably be in favor of that. There's old school, there's new school, and there's this, as Pierre Lebrun calls it, this artificial parity in the league that this loser point has created.
Yeah.
But more teams are closer into the mix
as a result of it, because of the loser points, they're all of a sudden you go on a bit of a winning streak and you're right back in it because you were never that far out of it.
Well, exactly. They perceive to be back in it, but they're really never that closely in it. Like New Jersey and Detroit would be the prime examples. I think at one point this year, at the 50 game mark, they were within 4 points. Right. But they were never like they never got closer than that. They'd fall to eight, then back to four. And then it looked closer than they actually were. And you'd hear, well, if we could win four in a row or five in a row, then we're in. Well, big if. Edmonton Oilers. Yeah. Now, what else do you have in plan? You've gone to this trip every year. Do you foresee anything tangible coming out of the meetings?
Maybe some offside stuff. And I know that you'll be jumping around the studio, clapping your hands for that. But Bobby Mack today, when we were doing our hit, which you can see on TSN.ca, you know, he made mention, and George McPhee said the same thing, that as much as they were supposed to look big picture today, they kept sort of drifting back to how to fix the game right now and getting into the video review and the offside stuff. And then the NHL representative in the meeting would go, hey, get focused. That's tomorrow. But all of the GMs were kind of, you know, wanting to get into that. So Bob said in his hit today that he really thinks that the offside rule is something they're going to take a look at, that they'll examine, figure out if there's a way they can tweak it. Of course, it'll have to go through competition committees and board of governors, all those sorts of things, but this was the think tank. So there's a chance tomorrow we could be talking about some significant ideas with regards to to offsides and how they're going to use those reviews next season.
Ryan Schaug from TSN joins us. Ryan, pretty convincing victory for the Oilers over the Detroit Red Wings on Saturday night. I thought the score kind of flattered Detroit, made it look a little closer than it really was. Edmonton was in complete control for long stretches of that game. The Wings really didn't generate anything. Now you got the New York Islanders, a team that's in the playoff spot, albeit very precariously, but they are in it. Obviously a tougher test, but a team that got steamrolled in the first 20 minutes against the Calgary Flames yesterday afternoon. Like, this homestand for the Oilers, not only can it set them up, I think, just for confidence, but really this is their chance. Like, everybody can, you can look in the rearview mirror at Calgary, and they're playing exceptional since February 1st. There's no debate about that. I think they've won 12 of their 15 games, but you know, that it's pretty rare that they're going to sustain that through their next 15 games. And the Oilers, kind of, they've never really went on a lengthy run of winning 10 of 12 or anything like that.
Well, no, but they kind of haven't had to. They haven't had to have that monstrous run. I mean, they started really well, obviously. But by the same token, they haven't really gone through that awful stretch of losing 12 of 17 either, right? Like, they've been pretty consistent. They've been pretty much down the middle when it comes to being able to sort their issues out. And so they don't let their bad spells go for more than a few games at a time. And I mean, to your point, you've got the Calgary Flames, just, you know, the hottest team in the game right now, just absolutely pounding their way through their opponents. And yet the Oilers are still, through some consistent play, they've still been able to maintain a bit of a lead on them. And they've got a home stretch here where they should be able to pick up a good number of points and hold off the Flames. I mean, they have the ability, they have the schedule, they should be able to do it here. Now, we'll see if they do, and Calgary's on a great little run. Who knows how long it's going to last, but they're showing that they're for real. I mean, you don't rattle off seven wins and not be for real. So the scheduling favors the Oilers, and the fact that they might be able to fend off somebody that's charging up the standings towards them like this. I mean, that win against Detroit, like, this Oiler team, man, I tell you, and McDavid obviously is a huge part of it with his point production and his ability to help generate goals. But this team's play is so much more mature than it used to be. It's so much more dependable, so much more consistent. There's a maturity with this group that, I mean, they're more talented, they're better, but there's a maturity. There's an identity. They actually have an identity. And it's consistency, and it's really served them well.
Chris Russell, we've had a lot of people texting. Russell didn't play, but he was on the ice today, paired up with Andre Sekera, so it looks like he'll be drawing back in. I think it would be strange if he wasn't going to play tomorrow if he was taking all the rest of them in practice today. I know there's still some people that aren't sold on Chris Russell. You've seen him all season long. Where do you think he's best suited to play in the lineup?
He plays with Sekera. I mean, that's his spot in the lineup. he stabilizes that pairing. Part of the reason why Sekera has been as good as he's been this year, I believe, is because he's had a steady partner in Russell, and Russell has helped to stabilize his game. So, I mean, he's not a perfect player, but they're not perfect players make $8 million a year, right? He makes $3 million. So for what they're paying him, what they've gotten from him, what he's contributed to the lineup, the consistency that he's brought, yes, he makes big mistakes sometimes. Yes, he gets beat sometimes. But for the money they're paying him and the service he's giving them, he's been really good value for them. And not every defenseman has to be, you know, the perfect defenseman with the perfect, you know, skill set that just, it's so obvious why he's there. Not everybody is the perfect two-way guy. Not everybody is the perfect offensive defenseman. He's an imperfect player, but he's filling a role. He's eating up valuable minutes. He's blocking lots of shots, and he's stabilized an important second pairing. So I think that he's been good more often than he's been bad. And for what they're paying him, that's more than fair value, in my opinion. I know he has bad games now and then. It just boggles my mind how often we have to talk about whether this guy's a good player or not. He's a good player. He is. He's a good hockey player.
I agree.
The Oilers got him on a good contract. He's been really valuable for them this year. I'm not saying they need to give him $27 million, but for what he's done this year, he's been good.
Shogger, I want you to do me a favor, if possible, at the GM meetings over the next few days. Can you ask them their?
I can do for you, buddy.
Sure, I love it. If you could ask them their thoughts on the current playoff format and how, and which I have no problems with, except one small, just little tweak to the wording. If you have four teams from each division, there should be no crossover. The only time the crossover comes in play if it's 5-3. If it's 4-4, you stay in your division, right? It's never happened in the West in the 3 years since they put it in, right? It's always been 5 Central and 3 Pacific, right? But I just, to me, it's a rule that doesn't need to be. It doesn't need to be in there. You're punishing the top two teams in the West by forcing them to travel farther if you keep it the way it is with 4-on-4. Because there's a chance that you could have like a Anaheim would finish fourth in their division. St. Louis would finish fourth in theirs. But St. Louis technically would have to go to San Jose and Anaheim to Minnesota or Chicago, for argument's sake. Right? Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Could you ask them to see if they would change that?
Yeah, sorry, and I hope my phone isn't breaking up here. It makes sense, and there have been some rumblings about the whole playoff format, and I don't know what any change would look like. There was talk of a wild card play-in game. I think it's on the agenda to at least discuss. I think there's some general managers that don't love necessarily the way it goes right now. And travel is a big deal. And it'll normally be the teams from the West who are pushing that agenda because their travel generally is further and more difficult. So yeah, we'll see if there's anything to that. But I think it is on the list in terms of making sure that they're happy with the current playoff format and the way it sets up.
Yeah, it's like it's a small wording change. That's all it is. It's not changing any of the rules. It's not changing anything how you're played. It's just at the end of the year, if it's 4-4, no one crosses over. That's all. Like, to me, it's a very simple rule that, like, if they're so worried about travel, like, they're just adding unnecessarily travel. Even in the East, right, where we all know the Metro teams are closer, right? Like, they're obviously way closer than you have changing over three time zones from the Pacific or two time zones from the Pacific to the Central. But even then, like, technically, rather than having Florida go all the way to Columbus, you'd never have to worry about that.
Yeah. No, and it makes sense. Like, it really does make sense. But that doesn't always mean it's going to get pushed to the front of the agenda and get done.
Yeah, like I just, they talk about these big grandioso things that we know are never going to happen. Why not look at the ones that are very simple changes that all they do is there's a benefit to it. And speaking of the offside, do you think there'll be any sort of change before the playoffs?
I don't think they'll make a whole wholesale change before the playoffs, no. I think, I don't know if the situation is so critical that they need to do that, if they believe the situation is so critical. They've had a couple that have been tough, guys in the air, with feet in the air, those sorts of things. But normally to elicit mid-season change before the playoffs and to start instructing people to think and call it differently, it needs to be a little bit more dramatic. So I'd say, my guess is no. But, I mean, if there's enough GMs and enough heavy hitters that are frustrated, then maybe, you never know.
And but my guess is that no, it doesn't change this year.
And one other thing that I found interesting, I was flipping and I came across an NCAA hockey game over the weekend, and they also have goal reviews, which I didn't know. So they were reviewing their goal. But you know what I found very interesting, Ryan? So the referee sits down to review the goal, or the linesman, I'm sorry. It was the offside. So they have the review. This guy was reviewing it on like a 32-inch TV in the penalty bed. Meanwhile, in the NHL, which is a billion-dollar league, they're doing it on a little high, like a little handheld phone. Like, I just found that rather interesting to be like, obviously college hockey is making a lot of money.
I would agree with you, man. Doesn't make sense to me that they do that. They skate over to the penalty box. They look at these little tablets. You know, you're trying to figure out is his foot in line? Is it not? It's like minuscule. It's like an inch, a difference of inches, and you're trying to figure it out off of a tiny screen. So yeah, get it in HD. Get a big screen HD. Give them a fair chance to make the right call. I agree with it. And really, for the amount of money the league spends on its technology, shouldn't be a big deal to get even just. I mean, you don't need a 55-inch monitor, but even a 38 or a 40 or something like that, it's better than a little flipping iPad.
And Mark Bergeron, Shogger, you're really going to have to improve your sleuthing skills. He was hiding behind a tree today to avoid the media, and it worked.
It's funny, man. Like Mark Bergeron, I guess, you know, we wouldn't know this, but I guess back in the day, he was one of the big pranksters, like one of the big dressed.
Yeah, I heard that. Yep.
But I mean, he's the GM of the Montreal Canadiens, so you can't really let that side of you out very much. It's a pretty serious job. But it was funny. He grabbed the plant and sort of snuck his way through. We were all killing ourselves laughing, and our ace cameraman Dave Joy out of Ottawa was able to get a good shot of it, so we had a little bit of fun with it. But yeah, it was funny, man. I don't blame him for not wanting to sit there and be grilled by Pierre LeBrun for 30 minutes.
Well, Shogger, hopefully you got some sunscreen on and you don't burn yourself. And we will talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Sounds good, pal. Take care.